And we are back with episode 369 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I never pick up anybody like that in an alley when I'm lying there unwashed and next to a garbage can.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and, you know, sometimes your enemy might really be your friend.
And right now, I'd say that our friends are the wardrobe department on Covert Affairs, but more about that in just a little bit. Yeah, obviously, we are picking back up on the list of shows from the last week or so that we started with our last episode. And yeah, we're going to jump right on in. But first, Edmund, I think there's something that you need to tell the audience right now.
Yeah. Right now, I need to tell you that we are going to discuss anything and everything in these episodes, as is our policy, which means you will be horribly spoiled. But it's been a while, so we certainly hope you've caught up and watched all the previews.
That's right, and the show we first hope that you get into right away is Covert Affairs, like I said, and let's go ahead and run that promo.
You need to trust me. It's much too late for trust.
Annie's changed.
I don't know who you are. I watched you die.
But who has she become?
You had Interpol drag my fiancé away.
We are following the money.
Tell me everything that's happened. I can help you.
You used us every step of the way. You're a monster too, just like Henry.
Covert Affairs, an all-new episode next Thursday at 10 on USA. Characters welcome.
All right, and that is Covert Affairs, Season 4, Episode 12, Something Against You. Augie works with Calder to destroy Henry, but Joan questions their alliance. Oh, let's see. The AMC people apparently got their hands on USA Network.
Well, you know, they're out of work right now, so they got to do something.
I guess so. Wow. Gary, I hear you like this show a little bit.
I have caught it on occasion, yes, sir. Yeah, it's, every once in a while it makes its way to my DVR, yeah. And just to go with your initial leadoff, well... I'm not going to complain about Annie in leather. I still prefer her in dress and heels. But that's just me. I can understand why you would think what you think.
Anyway.
I'm just a purist. What can I say?
All right. Wow, this episode just holy. After the last episode, I thought that they really stepped things up a notch. But they just kept going with this episode. I was really impressed.
Yay! Mm-hmm. Yay! Anyway, they sure did. Although, honestly, I think it comes down to something that, is it Sana? Sana?
Mm-hmm. Sana.
Sana. Sana was saying, he's like, Wilcox has been at this for a long time. He does this better than you. And that for me summed up this episode pretty well. You know, she laid out what in a sense was a perfect plan. It was a very well thought out plan, and it had a great chance of actually working and started to work. I'd say if you had it as, you know, a two part plan, part one was hook, line, and sinker done. Unfortunately, as Sana says, Henry's been at this longer. He does it better. He already had people working on this, and just before she would have reeled him in, his people, using his techniques because he knows to do stuff, caught her caught her trap, and he snuck out of it. So, I mean, that seems to be the thing that, Sana also later says she's really, I guess, being a sort of either our voice or even the sort of story prompter voice is, you know, can you, you know, be as bad as he is? I mean, when I say bad, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but can you do the things that he does? Because if you don't, you can't beat him. You have to do it, and you have to do it better than he does. And so that sort of sentimentality is really pushing Annie to do things that she never would have done before. She's really stretching herself to try and keep up with Henry, more or less, you know, exceed him. I don't think she's at that point. At least they're showing us she's not at that point yet. So, but she's getting closer. She certainly is. And I think that's another point this show did make. She almost had him this time, really close. Although it's hard to know where she's going to go next. It's going to be, you know, an interesting twist. Now, if we switch over to, I guess I'll say switch away from her side, even though we end up at her side again. You know, we have the whole DC machinations going on right now. We don't get to see Arthur this episode, which I was sort of wondering why they have Joan doing what I would have thought would have been more of Arthur's role, but I'm sure writers have their reasons. Anyway, but, you know, Joan trying to talk to Augie about how he could be, in camp with Calder, and I always thought Joan is smart enough. I thought she'd realized that Annie wasn't really dead, but I'm not sure. There's times when I think she's in on it, and then there's times when I don't think she's in on it. So it's, you know, a sort of a little little shaky for me, at least the way they're writing it, is the way I'm seeing it. And then we have this, the wild card of Helen brought back in again, which was a, you know, a bit of a surprise. So I wasn't expecting to see Michelle Ryan back in the show. I thought it was just a, you know, a sort of a one shot stunt casting type of thing, but it's nice to see her. And we see that she's starting to, she was sent over to, I guess, find out stuff on Henry as well, not realizing that Annie is really still in play. So I guess she didn't know Annie was there, and I wonder what's going to become of that. If nothing else, hopefully Annie has an ally to, you know, work with, and she seems to function a little bit better when she does have, you know, assets to fall back on, although I guess we all do.
Yeah, I like what you were saying before about, you know, this episode, it brought me back to, of all things, the episode of Babylon 5 Infection. when you obsess about the enemy, you become the enemy. Because that was kind of what Sana was saying to Annie, was that the things that you're willing to do and the lengths that you're willing to go to destroy Henry, you're becoming exactly like him. And, you know, Gary, you were putting it a different way, which I think is actually equally interesting, which is, in order to take down someone like Henry, maybe you have to do and be willing to do exactly the kinds of things that he would do. But what does that mean in the long run? Is it just perpetuating the same thing in a different way? Is it really ending it, or is it just transforming it? And so I think that's where this whole story is going right now, and why it's so much better than what we've seen in the past is that it feels sincere and authentic in the way that it's playing out. They're not just having Annie pretend to be this dark and this, you know, over the edge. She actually is doing all this stuff. She's, you know, right on that edge of a knife as far as whether or not she's going to be able to come back from some of the decisions that she's making. So I that's why I really enjoy this. And at the same time, I feel like they're doing the same thing with Augie and, you know, questioning, what are you willing to do? Because, you know, it's not just the fact that he's working with somebody who apparently killed the woman that he loves, but, you know, what is he willing to continue to hide in order to allow all of this to continue to go on?
Well, that's a part that is one of those things where I don't see how they can have any type of non-hostile relationship and carry on the belief that he killed Annie and he's not, you know, ready to almost, you know, choke him every time he sees him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I know towards the end of this episode, they said, oh, we can't meet in the buildings anymore or something along those lines. That the, you know, but still, I can't see them having any contact at all, at least unless it's through some middleman of some sort, which Joan, I thought, would have actually filled, but they don't seem to be doing that yet. So we'll see. But, anybody who follows either one of these guys, you're going to see them run into each other and figure something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was one thing that kind of got to me was it did seem to be, you know, that sort of that convenient trope of, you know, yes, even at the CIA apparently, you know, if you meet on the roof, it means nobody can see you.
And, or any other public monument.
That stuff, I mean, yeah, they've kind of, you know, that's become one of their things on this show, where it's like, you know, it seems that if you meet anywhere around the mall, it's you've managed to avoid detection. But you know, so that I will give them a pass on. But yeah, but I agree. I mean, even the way they were setting it up in the previous episode of, how pissed off Augie was at him, you know, as part of selling the deception. It would seem that, even them passing in the hall in any sort of cordial way, just, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Augie should like throw his cane out there, let him trip. that's the kind of relationship I'm seeing.
Well, if it's one of those times when he has the actual cane, so that's another thing. That over the seasons, I found a little amusing of how sometimes it's the fancy lightsaber cane, and sometimes it's the regular cane. But that stuff aside, I mean, I certainly agree that the way they continued, Annie's part of things, I really enjoyed. I mean, as a longtime lover of spy fiction and spy movies, having her, just bull her way through using his cover, using his hotel room, just still working it as hard as she did was really good to see, but at the same time, I mean, doing it in that way where, she did come close, but as you said, Gary, I mean, that line of Sana's at the end, was just absolutely spot on. And, really felt like it was, working well with the whole arc of the show of where, after our complaints, in early seasons, of her, swinging from competent to incompetent, them finally making her, a real fully fledged agent, who would have the Campbells on her side, and grooming her as one of the CIA's best. And, all that was ringing true while at the same time, having to go off in this other direction. She's doing her best, but, is it going to be enough? And, where is it going to take her, and can she go there? Really bringing up some interesting side of things that, certainly the way this show started is more of a frothy USA Network take on the spy biz is not something I expected, but I am really enjoying it.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that this show has evolved into something that, just never would have expected it to be this way.
Oh, I did.
At the beginning. Oh, come on. You never expected Annie to get this serious about things. And
Well, that's true. The dark hair did take me by surprise. I never saw that one coming, honestly. Her ponytail seemed to work as perfectly good cover for the last four seasons. I don't see why it became an issue all of a sudden.
They hinted that she was going to be pulling off some Sidney Bristow type of outfits and missions back at the beginning of the series, and I guess maybe it's about time that they got there. So, dark hair and leather pants maybe isn't the same as some of the stuff they used to make Sidney get into, but Alias was a slightly different type of show. Anyhow, I'm just going to say, this is the second time in a row that I feel like they knocked it out of the park with a 9 for me. So, Edmund, what would you give it, do you think?
I'm right there with you. Yeah, I mean, this was continuation from the good stuff they were doing with the return episode. So, yeah, I'll go with the 9 as well.
And Gary?
Yeah, I'll go the 9. It's close, but I'll stick with the 9. I thought some of the Joan and Augie stuff could have been handled better.
Fair enough. Okay, while we have Gary here, we're going to go ahead and switch gears from our usual just in-depth discussions and maybe get into a little bit of our rundown of quick hits, although there's only one or so that Gary would probably weigh in on, but we'll just go through them relatively quickly. And as usual, guys, if we could just kind of trade off here a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll start us off. First off, American Horror Story, Season 3, Episode 2, Boy Parts. Fiona helps Zoe and Madison deal with a tragedy. That's one way of looking at it. Meanwhile, Delphine struggles to adjust to modern life. And have been a little bit behind on this. But
I will say that after missing the first two seasons, I have jumped in. I mean, the sort of triple barrel of getting Kathy Bates and Angela Bassett to join Jessica Lange pulled me in. I've been having a lot of fun with this. You know, I mean, obviously with American Horror Stories, since they're doing the, you know, actually for once being a show that it is doing new stories each season. You know, yeah, you can just jump right in, and you know, this tale of the witches finishing school in New Orleans has you know, has been a lot of fun so far, and just as over the top as I've been led to believe in the first two seasons.
Oh yeah. This one had a lot of things, lots of disturbing stuff, but in a good way. I think it's very intriguing, and it doesn't really hold back, which is nice in and of itself. Nadim gave this one a 9 out of 10. He's loving this season. Mm-hmm. I would give it more of an 8. I felt that there were a couple things that they were trying to do as far as editing and post-production that it was a little over the top. I'm thinking in the spellcasting scene with the ersatz Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
It was a little irritating, the kind of post-effects they were doing on that, but... Yeah, I just took a little bit off the top for that. How about you? What would you give it, do you think?
Yeah, no, I think I'm more comfortable with an 8. You know, yeah, it's been very enjoyable, and but yeah, just feels like they're just sort of, you know, feeling their way into the story now to a certain extent. So it I'm good with an 8.
Okay, and Gary, can you take the next one for us real quick?
Absolutely. We're talking about Scandal, season 3, episode 3. Mrs. Smith goes to Washington. A mom from the Midwest hires Olivia's firm under curious circumstances, and soon things take a perilous turn. Elsewhere, Fritz and Mealy share their honest feelings about one another. Nadim, our reviewer again, felt very highly about this episode. He gave it a solid 10 out of 10. This must have really knocked it out of the park. And I know, from what I hear, it's getting good ratings for the show, and ABC certainly promotes it vigorously during the rest of the week. So, you know, a lot of people either are jumping on this show or they're proud and trying to push it on other people.
Yeah, this is a show that... I mean, just a lot of people that I know watch and love this show. It seems way out of our usual bailiwick, that's for sure. But I will say this, because there are some people that wonder, like, well, wow, you know, Nadim, you know, watches a lot of these shows and gives them pretty high ratings sometimes. And, you know, it's worthy of questioning, I guess. But, wow, you guys are watching shows that are far more genre-related and, quote-unquote, better that... you're a little more critical for with, you know, is it really on the same scale? And I guess my response would be this, is that even if it's not a genre that we usually enjoy, if it is a really well done example of the genre that it's in, then it's a fair representation.
Well, and I'd also like to say is, even though it would seem like all we have time to is listen, watch all these shows that we review here, I mean, we all watch a variety of other shows too that are non-genre, and so, you know, we can still, you know, evaluate it even if it isn't what we our favorite corner of fiction or, you know, or entertainment is. We still watch a variety of other things as well and can appreciate those even though we might not necessarily have the time to review them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could just point back to an example like in the spring, you know, Edmund was watching The Americans, which isn't really in our usual ballpark, but from Edmund's point of view, I mean, he was praising it week after week.
Yes.
And part of the reason
I still say it was the vodka. Anyway.
but you know, part of the reason why we're bringing in some of these other shows and talking about them, even if we're just pointing to the reviews over on the website, is to expand a little bit the context of everything that we're talking about. Because, you know, we did get people that were saying, you know, hey, you know, there's shows like Scandal or Revenge that we'll talk about in a little bit that, hey, we can, you know, why aren't you reviewing that or why aren't you talking about that? Because they're really good. And it's like, well, that's... I only have so much time on my schedule, I know. And I know that, you know, you guys feel that way. And there's shows that we talk about that, you know, Gary, you don't really get time to look into. And, I mean, there's been times where, you know, things like Breaking Bad, it's just Edmund and Bronstam that have had time to really get into it. So, yeah, I guess it's just to counter any type of criticism, say, like, wow, you give, you know, this episode of Covert Affairs a 9, and somehow, you know, this episode of Scandal is better. And it's like, well... maybe for the genre that it's in, it really was hitting the top marks. I'm not going to really speak against
Well, and you know, and it's, we've had this discussion before, you know, as we grade things, we grade it within the context of the show. You know, very rarely, even when we hit a 10, is it some sort of absolute truth that, you know, this stands above every other show ever in history type of 10 rating. What we're saying is, usually for these, at least how I like to think of it, is that, you know, for this show, did they do a good job? You know, it's hard to compare, you know, you get, you know, for example, even within some of the ones that we've reviewed over the past week or so, a Haven versus a Walking Dead are two very different shows. They could both have hit a 10, but affected you in different ways to have gotten you to that 10. So, you know, it's, everything's relative, of course. So, you know, keep that in mind as we do ratings too. We don't have some sort of absolute scale up on John's wall that, okay, one second, hold on. The last episode of, you know, Breaking Bad is now, you know, a 10th of a degree under the last episode of Babylon 5 or anything like that. You know, we try to keep it within relation to the show itself.
Yeah, there's a few different angles as how we do this, and certainly at the end of the day, whether you agree or disagree with the numerical value that we put on it, it's really just a way of giving some kind of relative value to it. But it really comes down to what are the things that we're saying? What's the context of that score that we're giving it? I mean, it's more of a
except for Bedlam, that was really bad.
Yeah, that's true. Now, but really, the fact is that as much as we talk about scores, and we then do, especially when we do our annual breakdown, and we go from the lowest score to the highest score, and sometimes it surprises us where things fall. But I would say that at the end of the day, that's more a concession to the fact that that's what people really expect to see out of a review, is some kind of score and relative ranking. But at the end of the day, I think that it's the commentary that is the more telling thing. Why do we feel that way?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that okay. We could have a good point and a bad point to a show, and what made up those points.
Exactly. Speaking of, going to move on to The Vampire Diaries, Season 5, Episode 3, Original Sin. Elena and Catherine both dream that Stefan is in danger and convince Damon to help them find him. But their plans are thwarted by a mysterious woman who seems to know everything about Stefan's past and Damon's disturbing future. Alright, and Nadim gave this one a 7 out of 10. I would definitely agree that it was a 7. There were some really nice things in this episode, but it was counterbalanced by a just metric butt ton of exposition. Literally, they seemed to just introduce a character just to deliver gobs and gobs of backstory. And it was fun backstory, and it actually took stuff from all the way back in Season 2 and kind of reframed a lot of it in a very interesting way. Explained the whole notion of doppelgangers, which has gone back almost to the beginning, and yet at the same time, it reminded me a lot of that episode towards the end of Battlestar Galactica where they explained the entire Cylon thing. It was I'm glad you told us that, but oh my, just exposition, and look, more exposition. It's just yeah, it kind of took all the strengths of the episode and whittled it down because of that. So I would agree with Nadim 7, that's for sure. All right. Edmund, if you could take the next one.
Yes, this would be Revenge, Season 3, Episode 4, Mercy. Emily examines what went awry with her plan, and someone unexpected helps her investigate things. Meanwhile, Victoria's actions are brazen as she makes provisions for her own future. And Nadim also very much enjoyed this one, gave it a 9 out of 10. And as John was just mentioning, this is another of those ABC shows that I know lots of people are enjoying, but with both Scandal and Revenge, I did give them a try after seeing some of the reaction, but they are just not my cup of tea.
Exactly. Like I said, I know a lot of people that do watch, and in fact, I will go back. When Revenge started, there were people that were practically begging me to add it to our staple, but there was so much else that we were doing. Let's see here. Gary, why don't you take the next one?
Absolutely. We're talking about Elementary, Season 2, Episode 4, Poison Pen. The CEO of a financial consulting company is poisoned to death, and one of the suspects is a woman from Sherlock's past. Jeez, that's kind of, I guess it's accurate in a way. I really like this episode a lot. Had a lot of twists and turns in it. A few chuckling surprises along the way. It was a real hoot. My personal favorite line was when Sherlock answers the phone and says, "Hello, mistress." It just cracked me up to no end. Yes. Do we all follow this one?
I know that Edmund does in Bronze.
I do. Yes.
Why aren't you watching this, John? You'll like it. I trust.
Have time.
Squeeze it in somewhere. Cut sleep out. You know, skip an hour of Assassin's Creed one day. No. Anyway, but no, it is a really fun show. I enjoy the the dynamic. I was worried that when the show started, it was going to be some sort of dumbed down Sherlock Holmes. I'll admit I wasn't thrilled with the gender change of Watson, but this show has really warmed up in me, and it's one of the handful of shows that I can honestly say I can't wait till it comes on. There's a few shows, not that I don't enjoy a lot of the shows that we do watch and review, but there's a few shows like, oh good, it's like, it's the day it's on, and I look forward to watching it live as opposed to even checking on TiVo or something like that, and this is one of those shows. So I'm really enjoying this. They had several nice twists and turns in this. We get this whole big chunk of a backstory on Sherlock. Well, we thought we had his backstory. They gave us backstory we weren't expecting, but I was really thrilled to get. It seemed to fit well, and it really it was another example of helping to humanize Sherlock, and not necessarily in a negative way, although it did involve some personal trauma, I guess, on his part. It wasn't that kind of like pitiful, like when we deal with him having been a drug addict type of things. It was just that, he had things in his past that had bothered him, and he had found a way to work through them and help someone else along the way. So, it was a whole nice twist of an episode. He had this whole little thing about writing letters to this woman who was the prime suspect. Although I thought it would have been nice if he actually had the letters, so that might have been interesting. But short of that, it turned out to be a really nice, tight, enjoyable story. Watson was in there enough, but I never felt like she took over. Sometimes I feel her character is sort of, I shouldn't say overbearing, but almost equal with Holmes, where I like him to still stay the main character of the episode.
Ed, what did you think, Heather?
Yes. Sorry. I agree with pretty much all of that. I mean, what I particularly liked was this way of filling. They're filling in his backstory, and giving him, this, this sort of this youthful obsession, with sort of, with one of these, kind of, show trials of, this, this young woman of, accused of murdering her father, and one of those ones that, shows up on all the cable networks, with Nancy Grace weighing in and that sort of thing. But filling in his backstory, but in a way that still maintains his eccentricities. It's like, you're getting background on him, but it's not taking away from, the fact that he's still Sherlock Holmes and is still, this sort of man apart in the thing. It's not giving you more background on him, but not, but not making him, a normal person, which is, which he shouldn't be. So, I like the way they're doing that. And, and then also, I mean, just the way they played off of, this woman's past and the suspicions that it brought, and the way that was, being used by this, this family that she's now involved with, it was a very well done episode, and at this point, Elementary and Sherlock, now, very firmly exist in their own universes, and I'm more than happy to have them coexisting in this one.
Now, Bronze Thumb gave this one a 9 out of 10. What would you guys give it, do you think?
I think I'm good with the 9, given the way they balance the backstory and the current case.
Mm-hmm. Gary?
Jeez, it was a really well done, tight episode. I'm having a hard time finding flaws with it. Although, I mean, admittedly, the protagonist ended up being, while tricky, still wasn't that sort of over the top Moriarty type of thing. Yeah, I think a 9's good.
Okay, very good. All right. Then we are going to go ahead and switch gears to, let's see, Edmund, if you could take this one.
Sure. This is The Good Wife, Season 5, Episode 4, Outside the Bubble. Alicia tries to obtain Lockhart Gardner files as she prepares to leave the firm. Meanwhile, the firm hires Elsbeth Tescione to represent them in a sexual harassment lawsuit brought by an employee, and Eli and Jackie disagree over how much influence she should have in Peter's administration. And Henry gave this an 8 out of 10, so it looks like Season 5 is continuing the high standard. I know it's been a little bit up and down at times, but looks like the new season is going well.
Everybody that watches this show has said that this season has been a bit of a return to form, and I think that Henry's been on board with that. Let's put it that way. All right, let's go ahead and close out the quick hits then with The Originals, Season 1, Episode 4, Girl in New Orleans. Davina convinces Marcel to let her attend an annual music festival in the city. Haley visits a mysterious doctor in the bayou and makes a shocking discovery. Klaus takes a special interest in Cammy, who reveals alarming information about her past. Rebecca tries to get to the bottom of a recent strange encounter involving Elijah. And this episode probably would have been a lot better if it wasn't focused so much on this Davina character, who is a 16-year-old uber-powerful witch played by an actress who can't act. I'll just leave it at that. I give this a 7 out of 10 because of that very reason. They either need to give this girl some acting lessons stat or make some changes to the show because, it just didn't work for me. Let's just leave it at that. Okay, so that being the case, that was all of our quick hits for this week, and we've got a few other shows, but they're shows that Gary does not watch. So I guess we can bid Gary adieu for now.
Oh, well, I will say goodbye then. I hope you enjoy the show, and yes, I feel the guilt over not watching Arrow. Yes, you've done your job well.
When we get to Arrow, if you listen to our comments, you'll feel even more inspired to jump into it. Let me just put it this way. 3 episodes in, and yeah, I think it's average. It's all of them are 8 or above. There you go, guys. That's a little bit of a tease. It's definitely kicked up a notch this season. I would almost say it's if it wasn't for so much of the backstory coming in the first season, it wouldn't be a bad idea just to jump in the second season.
Yeah, definitely.
If you can get over the differences between the... Just call it the new 52 version of Green Arrow. Really, that's so much better of a way of looking at it, right? Okay. Gary, thanks for your input, and we'll catch up with you later.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good talk.
Yep. And let's see, while we still have lots of time left for this particular episode, we're going to jump into Supernatural, and here is the promo.
You know, Cass is human.
This is all new to me. Hunger, the cold.
Find Castiel and destroy him.
Humans, so fragile.
We gotta find him.
They're human.
Supernatural, all new next Tuesday, 9, 8 central on the...
All right, and that is Supernatural Season 9, Episode 3, I'm No Angel. A group of angels hunts Castiel. Dean and Sam race to find their friend before the angels do. Huh? Homeless, Castiel tries to make his way through the city and comes across some unexpected surprises. Well, that was poorly written, but I'm going to leave that aside because I can't say that for the episode, and that's really surprising considering that it was written by my two least favorite writers.
Yes, the infamous duo returns, and we're not cringing.
No, because this time it actually made sense for all the characters to not speak or act in character because they were all in very different circumstances than they usually would find themselves. So perhaps that's why these guys were given this episode to write, because they figured, hey, we'll just tell them to write it like they normally would, and it'll be perfectly fine. Yes, even as I like an episode they wrote, I have to give them a hard time. But no, for all intent purposes, I will say this was a really good episode. I thought it was actually a big step up from last week. Focusing so much on Castiel and his new circumstances probably had a lot to do with that. Because there were some just beautiful scenes in this episode. The one that comes right to mind is the one that was in the church, when Castiel was really having some serious crisis of faith stuff going on.
Yeah.
And he had that discussion with the parishioner. And there's been a lot of times when this show has been criticized by those of religious faith for, you know, this whole idea that, you know, God is out of the picture and the angels are obviously very sinister. And, you know, what kind of message are they, you know, trying to send with this? I would say they're probably not trying to send any message, but, you know, people object to it from a religious point of view. And I've always kind of pointed out that, okay, first of all, there's stuff in the show called the Winchester Gospels that, if you give it a little bit of thought, if people know that they're going to be called the Winchester Gospels, that implies that things work out fairly well in the end, at least from a universal point of view. There's someone around to write.
The Winchesters may have literally gone through hell two or three times, but it does work out eventually.
There's been hints that God is in fact out there. He's just, this is how he wants it to play out. But at the same time, I really liked the answer that the parishioner gave here, and it was like, you know, Castiel actually, you know, first person knows exactly what's going on in heaven. He knows what happened. And, you know, she comes right out and says, your lack of faith has no impact whatsoever on my faith.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, thank you. Now, can you please just get, like, the other how many million people to freaking listen to that? Yeah. Maybe we'd all get along so much better if we could just accept that. But it really did kind of put it in there. It was like, okay, just because you don't have faith doesn't mean that I can't have faith and that I can't let that faith, you know, dictate my actions.
Yeah, sustain me and drive my life.
Exactly.
And, you know, yeah.
And you know, it was poignant for Castiel in that moment, but I thought that it was actually a really good way to address some of the things within that universe that, you know, actually that could turn out to be a very important point. That, you know, I actually do wind up thinking every once in a while, like, well, what does the normal person think is going on right now?
Yeah.
Like, because, yeah, there's a lot of really crazy stuff going on. So how does the normal person, you know, think about that? And, you know, whether it's, you know, Christian, atheist, whatever, you know, all the things that have been going on, where is their point of view on this? And it was kind of refreshing to get that. But at the same time, it was very relevant to what Castiel was going through at that time.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, you know, because I know the, you know, they've... even made the point in some of the meta episodes of where, you know, they seem to live in this other universe, you know, where, you know, angels and demons, you know, are more visible than they are here, say. But at the same time, it's like, no, of course, you know, for the hunters and the angels and the demons, you know, they're all caught up in this and seeing it all the time. But, you know, it's still the regular world with all these billions of people in it. So, yeah, it's not like everybody is aware that this is happening. I agree. That was a very nice way to inject that into it, that you know, yes, even though as the audience were sitting there going like, yes, but he knows, it's like, well, yeah, but it doesn't matter to her. She's just continuing on with things. But then getting back to that, that show that all of us are wrapped up in. I mean, also just some of those other Castiel scenes of him, dealing with being human and hanging out with the homeless and making all his comments about eating and sleeping and it was kind of like, we're kind of used to Castiel being this sort of, this person who comes out with these cryptic statements, and he's still doing it, even though he's not officially an angel, but just, for, as he's trying to adapt to these other things that he hasn't been used to. And so I thought that was really well done as well. It's staying in character, what happens to someone who suddenly has to, realize that, yes, he has to, actually have a human body and figure out how to work it. As you said, I mean, it was, to a certain extent, it was having characters, not be quite themselves, but I still think they managed to keep to the sort of core of the character as well. Mm-hmm.
And, at the same time, we have this thing at the end where Ezekiel doesn't want Castiel to know that he's there, and that just feeds into my, what I was saying last episode about the fact that Ezekiel really, there's things about him that leave you just a little worried about his motivations, that they may not be as benign as they seem to be.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I shouldn't say benign. There is a little bit of, quid pro quo going on there. But what is he really up to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something's not right there.
Well, even, the sort of the whole thing of, he's, unlike Castiel, like all the other angels, he hasn't had his grace taken away, but there's still this thing of like, oh yeah, now Sam's not quite right. Oh, this is taking a long time. It's like, is that really true? Or is he just, trying to hang around for whatever nefarious reason, they're cooking up in the background here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But yeah, the majority of this episode was the tour de force for Misha Collins that this episode was going to be. And I could have watched that for 3 hours straight. I know there are some people that just get tired of them, but I thought that this was some of the most range that he's been allowed to show on Supernatural. And yeah, he could do more than just drone in a, monotone, dry, humorous way.
Yes.
He knows the character inside and out, and I thought that he was, this was a really good example of that. What else can we say about this episode? Because it really was the Castiel hour.
I did like the way they were setting up, Bartholomew, the sort of new sheriff in town, and yes, I guess this is where some of the, perhaps more evangelical members of the audience, if there are any, might have some, have something they could choose to criticize, but that whole idea of him, basically taking over a televangelist's practice and you using it for their own ends, even there, I mean, compared to like some of the stuff that was going on with the Leviathans, and their corporate takeovers, that felt better put together and sort of more organic and in keeping with the show than some of the stuff that was going on there. We've kind of danced around it the whole time, but we have to mention that of all the things Castiel discovered, he also finally discovered sex.
Yes, in fact he did, and it was with a mercenary reaper who is working with the angels, at least so it would seem. And I guess we then know that if you're an evil scientist that's working for the enemy on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you get immolated, you get resurrected on Supernatural as a hot mercenary reaper. I really don't see the problem here. Put it that way.
Yeah. And of course, could then get offed again. So,
yes, exactly. But
she did achieve the strange double within about 24 hours.
Not even 24 hours, 2 hours.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Depending on when you watch it, anyway. But no.
No, you're right. I was getting my schedules mixed up there. Yeah,
I know,
no,
we're still remembering Supernatural being on Wednesdays, but.
Yeah. No, we now have that Tuesday night.
Block.
Power triple hour, but.
That's right. Speaking of, the next show we'll be talking about is in lockstep with that. This is Supernatural. Just because she seems to have been quote unquote off doesn't necessarily mean much when she's a Reaper.
Yes, I know.
So we'll see what happens there. But it was interesting because this was I guess when Meg's not around.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Meg is actually dead, so I guess they had to find someone to replace.
Yeah.
And of course, the fact that he was calling himself Clarence.
Yes.
Yeah. Gotta love it.
Yeah. Although, for both of us being of a certain age, I hate to say it, but we may be reaching the point where there is a larger segment of the population who's not going to get that joke.
I wasn't going to go there. But thank you. You are correct. I'm sure that was something that people had to be told, like, hey, did you know there was this in-joke?
Yes.
Yes, I did. Thank you. I'm now going to go beat my head against the wall. But anyway, I give this one an 8 out of 10. I think that there were a couple things that were just a little bit off still, but this was definitely one of the better efforts by these writers. I have to give them at least the above-average credit for that.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that, and I will just mention that it did seem to be continuing this thing of Ezekiel may use his powers, but I still think it's as much just to plant questions in Sam's head that are going to have to be explained. So.
That did seem to be more the point this time around, which is why I gave it a little bit more of a pass.
Yeah,
but I am still wary of it. I'm still worried that it's going to become a crutch. But yeah, we'll find out soon enough if that's the case. All right, well, let's see. Well, thanks to a lot of crazy scheduling on all of our parts, we are really behind on Person of Interest and Arrow. We're obviously not going to get to Arrow in this show. He's still there.
I was waiting for your Arrow commentary, but I guess I'll have to wait longer.
Yes, you will. Although I am tempted now to just jump to Arrow. We can do that. We might as well. Let's see then. We're going to go ahead and let's run the promo then for the second season of Arrow.
Everyone has a demon inside them. The killer and the hero.
The city is dying, and it needs someone to stand up and breathe new hope into it. That person is not Oliver Queen.
I don't know what to do.
You don't have to do it yourself.
The city still needs saving.
It needs a hero.
I don't think you wear that hood because you're a hero. You're a coward.
When I put on the hood, it's kill or be killed. My best friend died thinking that I was a murderer. I need to become the man he hoped I could be.
He is dangerous, and if cornered, I promise he will not go down without a fight. You'll never be a hero to them.
As long as the city is safe. Arrow, season premiere this Wednesday at 8, 7 central on the CW.
All right, and that would be Season 2, Episode 1, City of Heroes. Oliver returns to Starling City after the Undertaking and finds that things are in worse shape than he thought as Season 2 begins. Isabel prepares a hostile takeover of Queen Consolidated. Thea refuses to visit Moira in jail. Roy tries to fill the void left by Arrow's absence, and Laurel works to take down the vigilante. Flashbacks to the island reveal Slade, Shadow, and Oliver in a desperate situation. Okay, and that gives us a lot of things to kind of take point. Let's start then with probably what is the least impactful so far, as far as I can tell, and that is this Isabel taking over Queen Consolidated. So,
Isabel, yeah, well, I guess, yeah, obviously, yes, Summer Glau coming in and, you know, and yes, attempting to take over, I would say, since, you know, she doesn't get thwarted at the end, but she has to learn to share.
Yes. But the introduction of Summer Glau to Arrow, which is nice for a lot of ongoing Summer Glau fans, although she's kind of in the background for right now. But we see what is a recurring storyline that happens in the comics, from what I understand, which is that Oliver Queen's business ventures are constantly being threatened by outside forces, and it's actually been a running plot thread in the comics recently. So this is not something that's completely alien. And of course, it bears in mind that some of the people that write for Arrow and are executive producers for Arrow actually wrote for Green Arrow at one point at DC. So they kind of know that this is something that's been done many, many times before. But that's really just the tip of the iceberg here. Thea, and can I just vote for her as most improved?
Oh, absolutely.
This season? Holy cow.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, I mean, but both her and Roy, I mean, you know, it just feels, you know, that they, you know, they finally brought them into, you know, sort of, you know, a more mature footing, and yeah, and it is helping immensely, because the other parts of the show were, you know, were already hitting well, and you know, just pick right up, and you know, that just felt like the, you know, the biggest change and the most refreshing change.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, she's having issues with not just coming to terms with her mother having been involved with Malcolm Merlyn's plan and the Undertaking and everything, and that she's kind of taking the fall for all of this right now. But then also, you know, as it mentioned, Roy is going out and kind of picking up the vigilante angle. Mm-hmm. Since Oliver wasn't around, and boy, let's see, Roy Harper going and kind of taking up the mantle of vigilante. That's surprising. Not. yeah, that was something that was in the cards as soon as he was introduced.
Yeah.
To become something of an acolyte for Oliver, and this kind of gets it kicked off up a notch, I guess you could say. In his... boy, if Oliver wears green way too much, Roy's penchant for red it's definitely a callback to his character.
I'm liking it more already. Keep going.
Nah, it's working. Good.
Excellent. Yes. Okay. And then we get what, without getting too far into things that happened a couple episodes from now, was a little bit of the most annoying thing that was going on at the beginning of the season. And that was Laurel, and her crusade to take down, the vigilante.
Yeah.
Was it a complete shock of a plot twist that just as her father was coming to terms with the Hood or the vigilante or whatever we want to call him, mm-hmm. that his daughter would kind of pick it up because of what happened to Tommy at the end of last season? Okay. It mm-hmm. makes sense, but it still seemed like, oh boy, really? We're going to just have her do this now? But, you know, at the same time, I can't say that it doesn't fit her. And as I said, it does get addressed later. So, you know, not to, you know, and since we are behind a little bit, it is hard for me to divorce one from the other. So.
Yeah, no, that is one advantage or disadvantage of letting a few pile up like this. But certainly at the time, I mean, you know, that was the one thing that, you know, just felt like a complete plot convenience of having her dad, you know, not knock down a notch and maybe start rethinking things a little bit and and then just have her, you know, sort of do this flip from defending people in the Glades to joining the DA's office, you know, just so she could be the one going after him. you know, since we've been kind of jumping all around to this episode. I mean, you know, also the whole thing with, you know, I mean, of course, you know, of course somebody's looking to take over Queen Consolidated, since, you know, the part we kind of left out is the fact that, that Oliver has, you know, just decided to take off for the, you know, to go back to the island in the off season. You know, so we did have that, you know, that, you know, that, rather wonderful opening to the season of having Diggle and Felicity drop in on him.
Oh yes.
You know, which was basically, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, guys, we're gonna open up the season just, you know, in a way that leaves you, you know, completely confused, but you know, we'll explain it eventually, and it was still really cool to do.
and yeah, more Diggle, more Felicity.
Yeah,
more Felicity. I'm just saying this for Bronstone's sake. More Felicity.
Yes.
But, yeah, you know, the thing is that we know that they announced they're going to be bringing in somebody as Black Canary.
Yes.
And it's not Laurel.
And it's not Laurel, yeah.
Even though they have done a ton of foreshadowing that she eventually is going to be Black Canary.
So they and continued it, of course, in this episode.
Right, exactly. So it's like, okay, we kind of know that it's going to happen eventually, but she has to have a character journey to get there. So I feel like having her, she was kind of getting to the point where she was understanding the need for vigilante action in Starling City, given the lead up into the undertaking. But now that this has happened, for her to have this personal reason to be against it, for right now at least. From a character perspective, to have this kind of roadblock thrown in the way of her actually picking up the mantle of a vigilante as well made sense. Plus, introducing her eventual identity as something for her to pick up versus her to initiate makes sense as well. Although, you know, there were hints that it was going to be her mother that was the original.
Yeah.
That, oh, okay, apparently that wasn't the case, although where this new one came from, there's a lot of questions about that. So there's still a lot of ways that all of this could fit together and it would still make sense. But, you know, as you said, it was in this episode, in the context of this episode, the weak link. It's just a matter of, was it the weak enough of a weak link to overcome all the really awesome parts that were around it? And I don't think it was. I think it was just
because it really was a stunning return, and even in terms of just, you know, the actual action of the main action of the episode. I mean, having these, you know, sort of, you know, these, you know, not just Roy, but, you know, but then this actual team of sort of, you know, hood wannabes running around. And the way they use that, I mean, kind of, you know, you're just far better than even the, you know, the wannabe vigilante in the first season, of using it to really highlight Oliver's changes, you know, and introduce this, you know, I mean, this whole change of tactics, and, you know, and it felt like, you know, pretty much directly addressing all these things people were talking about from the beginning of the first season, you know, like, you know, no, you know, yes, I came in just, you know, crossing people off the list, you know, literally, and killing them, and I don't want to do it that way anymore. And you know, so yeah, I mean, in terms of that character journey that we expect Laurel to take, I mean, you know, that's the one, you know, we've been seeing Oliver taking, and you know, and it was just really great to see, you know, to see the show come back and, you know, throw all this stuff into this episode and still directly address some of the changes he has to go through, and do it in a way that just felt, you know, really organic and really earned, and you know, yeah, just kind of, you know, catapulted the action, you know, in this whole new direction for this season.
Yeah, and closing the episode on Oliver recognizing that that killing his, you know, his adversaries is not the best way to go, and also realizing he needs to own his identity a little bit more.
Yeah.
And instead of letting people call him the Hood or the Vigilante, he, you know, foresees that he is going to, you know, call himself the Arrow.
Yes.
Which is another step in the right direction. Even though he hated it when Malcolm Merlyn called him Green Arrow last season. So.
Yeah, as well. You have to consider the source.
Exactly. But Nadim gave this one a 9 out of 10. He thought it was a great return. Yeah. I would agree. I was between an 8 and a 9, but I'll go with the 9 with this one.
Absolutely a 9. Yeah, I was ecstatic when this episode ended.
And I'll be perfectly fair that the reason I had to go between an 8 and a 9 is that I know how I feel about episode 3. So I kind of don't know if I'm... that one was just... Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where even that falls in this. I'm trying to make it all relative, kind of like we were saying before. Again, knowing what's going to come and trying to talk about these piece by piece is a little difficult because... Yeah, Arrow, within the space of 3 episodes, did what I think a lot of people thought might have even taken them a season to do.
Yeah.
Really just completely took it up a notch in a big, major way. We'll get to that in our next show, I'm sure. So, Gary, is that enough to whet your appetite?
It might be. Like I said, it's going to take me probably till the winter break to catch up on season 1, but do you feel that season 2, from what you've seen so far, is something I could dive into, or do I really need season 1 to move on with the show? What type of show is this?
There is a good amount of serialization to it, but there is a distinct break between the time period. You could probably pick up a bit of it in context, and then, you know, kind of go back and watch some of the episodes just to kind of bring yourself back up to speed. I don't know that you need to see them all in a row.
No.
I watched the first 4.
Yeah, the thing is, the first season, it's a little uneven.
Yeah.
It definitely picks up right around episode 5 or 6. So,
yeah.
as is the way it goes, but.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about it, and it's almost a case where you could actually just watch, you know, like those last couple of episodes, just so you have the context of what he's coming back to, and then jump into season 2, and then fill in the rest of season 1 as you go.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to look at it. If you were to pick it up around maybe like episode, how many there were 22 last season?
I believe so.
Well, whatever the last 3 or 4 were, that might be a fair way to look at it. Because I think there were 3 episodes that kind of all bled into each other at the end of the season, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll have to look into that. You know, as we continue to have series that have these ongoing storylines, I often wonder how, people sort of dive into them or can get into them at when you've missed, say, even half a season, more or less a whole season.
Yeah, but I guess you could say that they're taking stuff that happened in the finale, which was a kind of 2 or 3 part finale, and the things that happened there were very obviously their launching point for the second season, so they refer back to it a lot. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you kind of need to know, but apart from that, I mean, it's very much in keeping with a show like Supernatural, where do you really need to know all the ins and outs of what happened in, like, the first 5 seasons to be able to pick it up like Edmund did? No.
Yeah.
But for those who have, you get to see the character journeys, and that, you know, is a nice little touch. It just adds a layer to the show that you might miss otherwise. But can you skip it and still get what you... you know, get the gist of it and move on from there? Yeah, you can do that. And I think that Arrow, like I said, if you just so that you know what was going into it in those last few episodes, because, yeah, you can't just take the last one because there's stuff that happens a couple episodes before that it kind of all blends together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you'd be okay from there.
Yeah, I mean, I just looked at the list, and it's, it was 23 episodes, and it's the last 3 in particular, starting with The Undertaking.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I know that the penultimate one, I think, was the one that dealt with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, that you'd need to know. But there you go. Go from The Undertaking forward, and you should be okay. That's only 6 or 7 to pick up on, if you look at it. From the, that's not too much. Really?
No, not at all. No.
Not at all. And it's good stuff. It's not like we're telling you to catch up on, you know, Bedlam.
Yeah.
If anyone else out there is not watching Arrow, this is what we would tell you to do too. So there you go.
Yeah. And and for those first few episodes, John Barrowman as an added bonus.
That's right. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...